Hello, and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with baseball writers and authors, artists and musicians, filmmakers, basically anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture. Because that's our slogan. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Now here's a guy who takes the admonition, don't quit your day job, to heart. Dr. Doug Wilson, a full-time ophthalmologist with a thriving practice, has written biographies about four prominent men, including two Hall of Famers, who nevertheless have slipped under the radar, especially for fans who never saw them play. Wilson's latest, Pudge, the biography of Carlton Fisk, was released last month, perhaps as a nod to his contribution to baseball for one of the most dramatic home runs in World Series history. It was the third year in a row for Wilson books released by Thomas Dunn, the first two being Brooks, the biography of Brooks Robinson, and The Bird, the life and legacy of Mark Fidrich. The fourth book was Fred Hutchinson and the 1964 Reds, published in 2010 by McFarland. I spoke with Wilson about his choice of subjects and the experience of working with different publishers. Doug Wilson, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, you've written books on Brooks Robinson, Mark Fidrich, Fred Hutchinson, a pitcher for the Tigers, mostly in the 40s and 50s, and a manager after that, and now Carlton Fisk. How do you pick your subjects?
First of all, I like to find a subject that hasn't been beaten like a dead horse. And, some of the greatest stories, unfortunately, have been told over and over and over. And so I try to find guys that I consider to be icons, at least of their city or their decade, that really haven't been explored that much in books. And of course, for me, growing up, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and so nothing is ever as good as when you're 10 years old. And so that's the golden era of baseball for me. And so I try to find guys in the 60s and 70s who, like I said, I think have good stories that haven't really been written about that much.
And so then tell me how you came up with Fred Hutchinson.
Actually, that was my first one. You're never really sure if you're actually good enough to write a whole book. And so, I've been a Cincinnati Reds fan, and actually me and my teenage son were at the Reds ballpark, and he looked up and, saw all the retired numbers, the Reds, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, all those guys, and he said, "Who's number one?" And, I knew a little bit about him, but not much, and, he was the first player on the Reds who had his number retired, and, of course, he was a really popular manager, had led him to a pennant, and then he got lung cancer and died during the season, and so the more I talked to people and found out about that, I just thought that would make a good story.
Now, are these what one would call authorized biographies? Did you get the cooperation of the...
They're all unauthorized biographies. I get the cooperation of family, mm-hmm. which, I think you really can't learn about a guy or how he is until you go back and walk around where he grew up, talk to people that were kids with him and his family and stuff. And so all of my books, I've gotten real good cooperation with parents or siblings, cousins, and family members, and lots of people who grew up with him and knew him as kids. But none of them are classically, with a termed authorized biography. The subject really has editorial control, and sometimes splits the profits, and that according to how much they market. And the thing about that is, sometimes there's things that a guy can't really say about himself that it's good to say about him, and kind of hate to give up editorial control.
Mm-hmm. What was the biggest challenge you had in writing these?
One of the things that with a book is I always think you really need interviews of people who knew the guy and played with him and to get first-person accounts. And so one of the hardest thing is just actually finding people. Sometimes you have to do some detective work to root people out. And sometimes you get lucky. You'll talk to a guy who knew him in high school and say, "Hey, I got five buddies, you got to talk to these guys, and they give you five numbers, and that's great. But a lot of retired players, sometimes it's hard to find them and get a hold of them. And some of the great players, of course, have so many people bugging them, wanting their time. It's just hard to get that.
So you actually spoke, did you actually speak with Robinson and Fisk?
No, I did not. I communicated with, at the time when I was working on the Brooks Robinson book, he had just had a real, real bad accident. He had had a lot of medical problems, and he really didn't make any public appearances for about a year. And so I knew that going in, and I talked to a couple of people who were real close to him, good friends, and I, you know, communicated to him, let him know what I was going to be doing, and I spoke with his spokesperson or personal lawyer, and she said, you know, good luck. But I didn't want to make any demands on his time at the time because I knew he was in trouble. Carlton Fisk is sort of a different sort of a case, and I'd talked to a lot of people who covered him as sports writers and knew him, and he's just kind of always been a guy who likes his privacy. Even now, he does very, very few interviews. He said, you know, he's a private guy, and you have to respect that. But I communicated to him to, again, let him know what I was doing through his siblings, and I wrote him letters, and I, you know, made the offer, you know, that I'd love to talk to you if you want. But I really didn't expect him to, again, from talking to other people.
Do you have any sense of his reaction to the book?
Well, actually, I was just talking to his older brother, is a really, really good guy, friendly guy, and helped me a whole lot. And I, when it came out a few weeks ago, I was talking to him, and I sent him a copy. And he said, you know, Carlton was going to be down to play golf with him that weekend. And he said, well, throw me in an extra buck, I'll give it to Carl. So he's got one. I haven't heard anything back yet. But
now, Hutchinson was published by McFarlane, which is known for more scholarly treatments. How did you hook up with them initially?
Again, your first book is always hard, you know, and I knew nothing whatsoever about the book business, and, you know, you write up some proposals, a few sample chapters, and you send around to people, and, you know, basically the big companies won't even look at something unless it's brought to them by an agent, and, of course, I didn't know that at the time, but so I got turned down by everybody in the North American continent, but McFarlane will deal directly with authors, and they're good at giving first-time authors a chance, and so, you know, they do small niche market, small run books, and but so I had no complaints about that. Of course, you can't give up your day job if you're writing McFarlane books. You're not going to make much. But then for the next one with the bird, of course, everybody, you know, loves a story about a guy who talks to baseballs, and so I communicated to a few agents, and I got lucky. The one agent thought it was a good idea, and so he picked it up and took it to the bigger company, is a branch of Macmillan, and they bought in on it.
So in
fact, I worked with them. They've done all three of my other books.
So that's Thomas Dunn. You went from McFarlane, which is a small publishing house, to a large publishing house like Thomas Dunn. What was that experience like? What were the major differences?
Pretty much night and day. You know, McFarlane, they do a good job. I don't have any complaints, but really it's about one edit and pass is what you get there. All the other editing is just how vigilant the author is, you know, how many more times he wants to go through it. You know, with Macmillan, I think it's about four different editing passes. You get just the general editor, then you get the guy who does the English and grammar, then you got the guy who does the fact checking and checks out baseballreference.com on everything, and so, you know, it actually takes about a year once they get the manuscript to get it out from all that, and of course they have a better marketing guy, and you know, just it's a bigger deal.
Have you had an opportunity to go on author tours, book tours?
You know, again, with my day job, I'm an ophthalmologist, so it's hard for, and I'm in practice by myself, so it's hard for me to take off for a week or so. I've made some short trips that You know, Brooks Robinson was from Little Rock, and I made friends with a few guys who grew up with him, and they have a Little Rock literary festival. It was like a 3-day weekend, and they invited me down for that because, you know, the local interest. And so I really enjoyed that. I made a couple short trips up to Michigan for like 2-day trips to go to a few independent bookstores and things to talk about. And the Library of Michigan sponsored me to go up for a couple days to talk about the Mark Fidrich book. So some short ones, but I would love to get out, and I love to talk about baseball, but it's just hard for me to get away for a long time.
Now, you talk about the time. I mean, you put out 3 books 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
That must be difficult.
Yeah, sometimes I look back and I think, how did I do that? But, you know, when I started writing, I always loved baseball and I kind of liked to write, but, you know, you're busy with kids and jobs and stuff. And then all of a sudden my 2 boys were in college and I looked around and all the time I used to go to their games and drive them around, I had that free. And so I thought, you know, I should do something that I enjoy. And so that's how I sort of fell into writing. But sometimes we do have to get a little creative, you know, maybe some mornings wake up at 5 and get in a couple hours before, you know, anybody else comes by to bug you.
Do you have a project coming up, another baseball topic?
I'm kind of tossing around 2 or 3 right now. You know, some things will sound good and then you start exploring it and you find out, again, it's already been written to death and you don't really have anything new to add. And then sometimes you think it's a good idea and you bounce it by the publisher and they say, yeah, that's great, they'll sell 200 books. So, so, like I said, I got 3 or 4 ideas right now I'm hoping to hone in on, maybe one. And then every now and then I think I'm getting kind of tired too. So, nothing definite right now.
So does that become a consideration? I mean, Brooks Robinson, Carlton Fisker in the Hall of Fame, Mark Fidrich was a popular personality. Do you think you have to cater to what the market wants as opposed to what you want to write?
A little bit. Again, you know, sometimes there's certain things that I think that would be really fun to write about, but then you know, you'd hate to write the greatest book never read. You like to get a little something for the effort. Again, I'm not ever going to give up my day job, but, you know, you'd like to at least see your name in the top 50 on the list of current baseball books or something on Amazon for a couple of weeks after it comes out. So you know, you have to, write it. At least hopefully somebody's interested in it.
Have you always done nonfiction?
Fiction's really, really hard. I've dabbled a little bit in fiction, and I think every doctor, everybody who goes through medical school, has a great fiction novel in their head based on their internship year. And so, I did write a little bit, and I showed it to my wife, and she said she thought the main character was the biggest jerk she'd ever heard of, which kind of hurt my feelings because it was based on me. So I made a note not to let her be my literary
critic. There you go. And we've been talking with Doug Wilson, author of Pudge, the biography of Carlton Fisk. Doug, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Well, thanks for thinking of me.
And that was our bookshelf conversation with Doug Wilson. Tune in again next time when we'll have another guest from the world of baseball pop culture. Not sure yet if it'll be literature, music, art, film. Who knows? It'll be as much a surprise to me as it will be to you. And remember, for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews about baseball, visit Ron Kaplan's BaseballBookshelf.com. And if you have a question or a comment, please send them to Ron Kaplan's BaseballBookshelf at gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
If old man Columbus had sat in the stands, had seen Matty pitching that fader so grand, he'd have said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land. Gee, it's a wonder.